What's up, everyone? I'm Joe Pompliano, and this is The Joe Pomp Show. Hope everyone's having a great weekend so far. I have an awesome conversation to bring to you guys today. Today's episode is an interview that I recently did in Miami with Gunther Steiner. Many of you guys probably know Gunther from the popular Netflix series Drive to Survive. He is the former team principal at Haas, and we talk about everything. We talk about what he did at Haas, the growth of Formula One, Liberty Media, the cost cap, how to develop more U.S. Formula One drivers, the Miami Grand Prix, the economics of hosting a race, and so much more. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this conversation, so let's get right into it. Today's podcast is sponsored by Doer. I'm super excited that Doer is now sponsoring this podcast because they sent me a pair of jeans a few months ago, and they are absolutely fantastic. Finding a good pair of jeans is never easy, especially when you want something you can wear all the time while still looking good and feeling comfortable. I don't know about you guys, but it feels like I try 3 to 4 different brands every year, and they almost always never work out. Some don't fit right, some shrink in the wash, some aren't comfortable, etc. But I was recently introduced to Doer's denim offering, and I think they cracked the code. Doer's denim uniquely mixes classic style with technical performance. It has 360-degree stretch, which keeps you cool throughout the day, and it's become my go-to option for virtually everything, from watching games at the bar to date night. So if you want to upgrade your closet today, give Doer a try. They have a bunch of different options on their website, and the best part is they're offering all of my listeners a special 20% discount code. All you have to do is go to shopdoer.com/pomp. That's shop, D-U-E-R.com/pomp. Today's episode is sponsored by Hyperice. Hyperice is not only one of my favorite companies in all of sports, but they're also one of the fastest growing companies in sports today. Hyperice is the official recovery technology partner of leagues like the NBA, MLB, PGA Tour, and even the UFC. And you've probably seen athletes like Naomi Osaka and Erling Haaland using their products. But Hyperice isn't just for pro athletes. Me, personally, I use their Hypervolt massage gun and vented heat and back wrap several times each week, and it's become an absolute game changer for my health and wellness. Not only is it helpful after hard workouts, but sometimes I just wake up and my back hurts because of how I slept. So I throw on the heated back wrap and it literally solves everything within minutes. It's absolutely incredible, the products that they built, and I want all of you to be able to experience it for yourself. So go check out Hyperice today and start recovering like a professional athlete. All of my listeners can use code JOE15 for 15% off their order. So make sure to go check out hyperice.com today and use code JOE15 for 15% off your order.
First question, do you miss Formula One?
No, because I'm still here. You know, yeah. I'm still...
Do you miss being a team principal?
No, not really. No. It's not like... I'm in this environment since a long time in racing, in Formula One, the last 10 years full time, you know, and... When I was in Bahrain this year, and people said, oh, nice to have you back. I said, guys, I never left because I was at the last race and I'm the first race again. So I'm still around in a different role. If I would have nothing to do with Formula One, would I miss it? Maybe a little bit, but not this much. I mean, I don't define myself by my job, you know. I mean, I've got plenty of things to do in life, but I've got now the opportunity to do things in Formula One. And I don't know why, because people are asking me to do it. I'm not chasing them. I can pick, you know, and I do the things which I like. And I can work with the people I like to work with and say, oh, I would like to do this. I don't want to do all races this year. Because at the beginning of the year, when it was announced that I'm having a year off, I maybe go to one or two races. And now already I'm up to, I think I'm doing half of them. It's good also for me to see it from outside, because when you're running a team, you get that tunnel vision. You just think about you meaning the team, you know, as well. And you don't see anymore what's going on. And it's much better to see what's going on. And then you can make the decision what you want to do next.
I have two questions off of that. Number one, what was the challenge of running Haas versus a different team? So I ask because a lot of Americans, I think, they see Formula One now, and they see it with the cost cap. And like, oh, every team has the same amount of money to spend. They get that with the salary cap. It makes sense. It's like, oh, everyone should be kind of equal here. That's obviously not the way that Formula One has operated, and I would argue still operates. Talk to me about just like the challenges of running one of the smaller teams on the grid budget-wise versus one of the bigger ones.
The biggest challenge in Formula One, if you see how close the field is together from the fastest car to the slowest car, it's sometimes in qualifying a second. Think about how small that is going around.
A minute and a half lap.
Exactly. Yeah. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing. So the budget cap has brought the teams much closer together, but the big teams, they still have got the infrastructure, which is just so much more developed over decades of being in the sport. So they have got that 1/10 of a second advantage here, 1/10 here, and makes up a second. The money you spend, you've got operational money and capital money you can spend in under the budget cap. And if you have invested in your capital, you can use the operational better. For example, if you've got an infrastructure in place which can produce in-house, you can save money, because if you give it to a supplier, the supplier needs to make a living. He's not going to sell it to you at cost, because otherwise his business goes down. So, and smaller teams, and especially Haas, has no infrastructure in place, because when we started off, it was our intent to be different and to lean on other people, expertise to do things. But then with the budget cap came, all the teams, they immediately invested in their capital investment, you know, by machinery, tooling and stuff like this. And they're just that little bit better. And Haas never invested in that, because it's not the business concept. And my idea was to invest in that one. And obviously, Mr. Haas didn't want, and he owns the team and he calls the shot. And I'm perfectly fine with that, you know. So that for the feat is not together, but it will get together. If you think about before the budget cap to now, the time difference between number one and number 10, it's nothing. Before it was maybe 2-3 seconds. Now it's 1 second.
And you think that'll continue to compress over
absolutely
time as the infrastructure gets closer?
Exactly, because some of the smaller teams now, they're far behind, invested in the last 2 years. But until this stuff comes online, it takes time, because yeah, it's such a complex sport.
Well, I was going to say, it's not just money, right? Because Aston Martin would be at the front of the grid if Lawrence Stroll wanted to spend as much money as he wanted. But it's a lot of other things that go into it versus just cash.
Yeah, you need the talent. I mean, like in every business, you need the best people at the right place, you know. And until you find the people, until you kiss a few frogs to get there, you know, you're always doing that when you build something up, and it takes a bit of time. But how do you attract the best people? You cannot do it with sheer money anymore, because the money you pay people goes in the budget cap, so you cannot overspend. You need to give them a good environment and a good vision where you want to take the team, you know, so the people are attracted to a company. And obviously, Aston Martin invested a lot in their infrastructure. And what I think, if they continue, and they invested a lot in their people, the talent they've got there, they employed, it will take a little bit of time until it all gels and comes together.
But you think that it will at some point?
At some point. But already he made a big step. Yeah. Think about when he bolted, where the team was, where it is now. But to get up to the top two, it's so difficult.
Yeah. People look at baseball here. You follow baseball at all?
No.
No. But you can just go buy the best players.
Yeah.
you can pay them whatever you want, really. There's no salary cap and you just
go do it.
But
that was Formula One before the budget cap. It was a little bit like this. If you wanted to go big, you just throw money at that.
How long were you in Formula One for?
With Haas, 10 years. And before, I was there 3 years. I was there with Red Bull and with Jaguar.
Yeah. So you've seen it all. You've seen teams go bankrupt. You've seen teams get sold. And you think that the cost cap is good because it stops that all from happening?
It stops that all from happening. It gives stability, and you don't have teams which go bankrupt anymore.
Yeah.
Because
now they're all worth, you know, whatever.
Billions,
because,
yeah, billions.
Because they all have a floor on what they're going to, or you know, a ceiling on what they're going to spend.
Exactly. You can manage it.
Profitability
yeah, exactly.
floor,
yeah.
And it's different. So that's kind of changed everything. Let's talk about Formula One in America. You've lived in America for a long time now. Has it been fun to see Formula One make inroads here? Did you always think it was going to happen?
I would say yes, because otherwise I wouldn't have started what I did, you know, because yeah. I never could understand why Formula One didn't pick up in the States. I moved here 18 years ago, and I could see, I knew the sport very well. There was no real interest to make America work for Formula One, but when Liberty Media took over, it changed completely everything.
You're talking about before at the league level. At the owners of
yeah exactly
before.
Yeah before yeah because when CVC owned it and Bernie Ecclestone ran it, there was no love affair with America about, because America is is different to all the other markets, and it's not an easy market, you know. But when you understand how America works, you need to make it work, and it can work. And when Liberty came, they made it work, because Liberty Media, obviously an American company, a big American company, they know the market. They knew what they needed to do to make it work. And for them, that was the opportunity to make their business bigger by bringing it to America. America is still the biggest economy in the world. And Formula One was very little represented. It was very good represented by Austin, but it was very little in the scheme of things, because America's got 350 million people living here.
Yeah. I said I had two questions for you earlier. The second one.
You forgot the second one.
No, I'm about to ask you right now. why? What is the most difficult part about Formula One, and why is it the travel?
Yeah, the travel. I didn't struggle with the travel. It's just part of it. I mean, it's whatever you do, you know, this is part of it, and you need to deal with it the best you can.
I was in Vegas, and people were having breakfast at 4 in the afternoon. And yeah. they'd have like lunch afterwards or dinner afterwards at like 3 or 4 in the morning. So your whole day is messed up.
Yeah, but it's in a lot of places where night races are, it's messed up.
Yeah,
but,
Singapore
but
or whatever.
It's a choice.
What do you mean by that?
That you don't have to do it.
Yeah, you could just leave the sport.
No, you can do something different. But that's what I always say. If you want to do Formula One, you need to want to do it. And this comes with it. And you just live with it, you know. Obviously, if you're starting to debate, oh, why do I have breakfast in the afternoon? Oh, I shouldn't be here. You better don't there. Breakfast in the afternoon because the schedule demands that we go out at 3 in the afternoon. And that is, we change our day to it. It is what it is, you know, and I always say, I always sleep when it's dark and be up when it's daylight, you know, and I don't never look, oh, back at home is this and this time, because that confuses you completely. Yeah. You cannot do anything anymore.
Yeah. How physically challenging is it for drivers?
I think some of the races are very, very, very challenging, like the high-speed trucks.
Physically or mentally?
Both, physically as well. Physically, the G-forces are very high, you know, very high.
How would you explain that to a normal person?
It's difficult to explain because the only thing, something to compare is a fighter jet you're flying, you know. It's your neck mainly, but you have to be fit with it, which will let you down if you're not fit, because you cannot drive these cars if you cannot keep your head up.
Yeah.
The rest of it, but they are well-trained athletes. I mean, they train very hard. I mean, and you see them, they're all...
Well, when the rookies come in, they're usually hanging their heads after the first race.
Yeah, exactly.
Necks are sore.
But it's normal, because the only way you can train this neck muscles is driving a car. You can do some training, you know, with the... They do that, but the real training is in the car when you get used to it.
So we're here in Miami, right? The Miami Grand Prix. I came here last year, and I did a hot lap. And I get in the car, and Mika Häkkinen's driving. I'm like, this is awesome, right? I couldn't even explain it, how comfortable he was behind the wheel... we're not in a Formula One car. We were in a McLaren, but he's going 100 and some miles an hour. 4 inches, it might have been even less, to the wall. And he was like laughing and smiling. And I'm, you know, I thought I was going to be cool with it. And you start doing it and you're not cool with it. Or you realize pretty quickly that you're not. And it just felt like there was a comfortability there that wouldn't be there with a normal person.
Absolutely. It's talent. I mean, I've got the same experience when I drive in a hot lap. I mean, the braking point, for example, I wouldn't know where to start to brake. They just know it, you know. Yeah. It's something that's their talent. And as you say, it's like, I've got the same feelings as you sitting in one of these cars with these people. It's like, you're just comfortable. It's exciting because you go fast, but you never feel unsafe. I never felt unsafe because they know what they're doing. But that is what they bring to the party, I would say.
Yeah. So the U.S., it used to just be Austin now, then it became Miami and Austin. Now it's Vegas, Miami, and Austin. When you guys came here 2 years ago to do the Miami race, what was the feeling like that behind, you know, you, but everyone in Formula One, just we're going to try to make this work? Or was there a little bit of animosity that we were kind of expanding and adding more races and things like that?
No, they're expanding. Everybody likes to come to America. I mean, they say everybody... Everybody means 90%.
Why is that? Because we eat a lot of food here or something? I heard Carlos Sainz once. They said, what's your favorite part about America? And he was like, the meals. They eat a ton of food. I'm like, what the hell, man?
I don't know what Carlos thinks about, because maybe he doesn't get enough food at home, you know?
You've lived here, so you know.
No. It's just America. Like, Miami is Miami. I always, when I was young, I wanted to come to the United States, but never had the opportunity. And when the opportunity came, I took it, because it's still the land of the free, in my opinion. You know, it still gives you opportunity here. You know, a lot of things are a lot easier in the States than anywhere else. But obviously, people don't come to live here when they come with the Grand Prix. But it's like, it's just fun. Nice to be.
They'd rather come here than maybe somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't say where to go.
I'm not going to say other places, but they'd rather go here.
Exactly. Rather people go places like this, like go Australia, Canada. They are all good places to go to, you know, because there is freedom and you have choices, you know. So and people enjoy it. And what you asked before, were people critical about Miami? No, but when you get here, it's always like, oh, this could be wrong, that could be wrong. But that is normal, you know. People are normally
It gets better every year too.
Exactly, right? And Miami did a great job. They took all the criticism and turned it into a positive by sorting all the problems out. And now people cannot wait to come here.
If you, let's take Miami out of the equation, what was your favorite track to go to? City track, just the whole experience.
I would say Melbourne, because I've got good memories there. It's a nice place. Again, it's in a city or near a city, very close to a city. I like that places. And people enjoy to go to the race. They enjoy Formula One coming to town.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that you get to pick and choose what you do now, which is great, right? You don't have to, you know, do things that you don't want to do, but you're still choosing to come around a lot and specifically work with Miami in this capacity. What made Miami special in that regard and someone you wanted to work with?
First of all, it's close to home where I'm now. A lot of respect for Stephen Ross and Tom Garfinkel, what they did, because when I started the Haas team, it was as well. I had a vision and I got it done. They had the vision, and which was make a race here in a cool city, somewhere where nobody ever thought there will be an F1 racetrack, and just race the game. You know, they race the game in Formula One. And because I'm in the sport a long time, I respect that a lot. If people make an effort, invest their money, put their hands where their mouth is, you know, and make something special, because by Miami racing the game, a lot of the other venues had to follow, because otherwise they would have dropped out, you know, because somebody can do it and a newcomer can do it. You know, you're on the calendar since 20 years and you cannot put a show on like Miami. They still cannot put a show on like Miami because they're not in Miami, obviously, but they have to race their game, which makes the sport in general all better. So you need people like this to take the sport forward. And therefore, I like to work with them when they ask me. And I said, this is cool.
Seeing this place beforehand, you would have never imagined that what it would look like on race day. Like, not even weeks before, but like years before, right? Like, the idea that they would put a track around the stadium is kind of
I just have seen a big show, you know, of it, how it was before. I mean, people are just like, how can you race here? You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It happened.
Yeah. So you've, I would say, become more popular over the last few years since Netflix started working with Formula One. Well, has your life changed at all in that regard?
A little bit. I mean, it's like people recognize you, but my life, how I, things I do and what I don't do have not changed. I mean, I stayed the same. You can speak with people which know me since decades.
I believe you. You don't got to convince me. Yeah. Did it?
You don't want any witnesses.
Did it portray you accurately, do you think?
I didn't see it.
Oh, you didn't watch
it? I don't watch it, no.
You never watch it?
I never watched it.
No. Why not?
When it first came
feels out, weird to see yourself on TV.
I think I could get used to that one feeling weird. You know, it's like hearing yourself and you're in the same position. You see yourself, you get used to it. I'm not a watcher of myself or a listener of myself.
Yeah.
I do it if I have to. But no, for me, it was more like if I see me, maybe I try then to do things different or better. But I realized I'm not an actor. If I would be an actor, I would watch myself to get better because I'm acting. But I'm just being me.
Yeah.
So if I then watch me and want to do things better, every time I see a camera around me,
it might change the way.
Exactly. I start to act. And then it's not what comes out, but it's not good for me because then I get paranoid about the camera and I want to be me, you know. I don't want to be, under pressure because I see a camera.
How does the filming process work? You know that you're with them for that weekend, but they're not asking, they're just following you around?
Exactly. I forget that they're around, that they get the mic on after 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah, so they're like got you in your office making conversation calls and stuff.
Yeah, but they're there. It's fine, you know. And the other thing is you do not know what they're using anyway. So if you would start to act when they're there, I mean,
it
would
be something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the challenges at Haas of different budgets and things like that. Were there any instances where you guys got, like one that came to mind was if you looked down the paddock, you guys had less seats on the pit lane than other people. And I had read somewhere, you tell me if it's true, was that basically the idea was that by having less seats, you could save money in transport costs and things like that. Is that true? But two, are there any other instances where you guys got creative to do things a little bit differently like that?
It's true. You know, you have to be creative with everything. I mean, as a team, you have got a certain money and you need to spend the best. So you always try to, I wouldn't say cut corners, to get the best out of the money you've got. And for example, the motorhome was smaller than anybody else's in Europe. You use motorhomes here, everybody's the same.
Because Red Bulls floats on the water.
Exactly.
you guys didn't have one of those.
Our one didn't even stand up on dry land, you know. So no, it wasn't this bad. It was all there. It was just smaller. It was a different dimension because there was no additional money to spend on niceties. Call it like this. We had all the essentials. We couldn't complain. We had the essentials, but there was never anything better than it needed to be.
Yeah, and how does the sponsorship side of it work, right? Obviously, more sponsors have come in since the sport has become more popular. I know Haas, for example, you guys had signed a deal with Chipotle and other brands like that. But how does that work? Because it seems like some drivers come with more sponsorships than others, and some brands want to align with teams that are either in their region or have drivers that are from their region. How does that process work? Are you guys like basically always selling, trying to go out to promote yourselves to brands, or do you just take inbounds there?
No, it's a continuous selling job. I mean, you know, because there is not one way to do these things.
It feels like that's like a big part of the job, is what I'm getting at.
It's a big part of the job, trying to get the money in, and then to keep the sponsors happy as well. Because once you've got the money, you need to give them what they pay for. You know, these days, a sponsor doesn't come only to have a sticker on the car. They want the whole experience of it, you know.
Entertaining people at races.
Entertaining, activating, you know, activation, giving them race cars, being in the factory and things like this. There's a lot of things which goes, once you got the sponsor, the real work starts. But it's actually then good work because you've got a partner on board. We at the time at Haas found MoneyGram, which is still there, you know, and they're a great sponsor.
Yeah, and it feels like that might have changed specifically for you guys too because of your popularity rising as well. Is that fair to say?
You know, that's what people say. I think it didn't harm the business, you know, because...
Well, you tell me, you were in charge. Were people coming to you guys more than they were before?
Yes, I would say so, but we put a lot of more effort in to find money as well. And in general, F1, with Drive to Survive, got more exposure, so more people got interested, so you get more...
It's tough to tell where it was coming from.
Exactly, it's tough, but for sure it influenced it, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that Logan Sargeant's an American driver? Do you think that there will be more American drivers in the future?
What I always say, the United States missed a few generations of drivers to get to F1. And again, if you're a race car driver in America and you drive IndyCar or NASCAR, you can make a good living and life is good here. Being an F1 driver is not easy. It's hard work. It's a lot harder work, and no disrespect to IndyCar drivers and NASCAR drivers, you know. But if you think NASCAR and IndyCar drivers, what you said before, don't have this big trouble.
Everything's here.
Everything is here. It's in the United States. If you wanted to make to F1, you need to go through the ranks F2, F3. Otherwise, very difficult, if not impossible, to get a super license. So that means at a young age, you need to move to Europe while leaving behind a perfectly nice life in the United States, where if you be a race car driver here, you can make a good living and as well. So I admire Logan, what he's doing, the effort he puts in, because he puts a lot of effort into it. And it's difficult. You can see it, you know.
He got his car taken last weekend.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you crash a Formula One car, like total it, how much does that cost?
Millions. I mean, a Formula One car costs millions. One of his cars is worth millions. I mean, the engine alone is worth over $1 million, you know? So if you crash and you destroy the engine, there's your first million gone.
Yeah, and in a cost cap, that becomes really prohibitive.
Yeah, it becomes expensive, not only money-wise, but also development-wise, which is then, again, performance-wise, because you cannot develop.
You're taking something from here to put it here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To patch a hole you take from your development.
So drivers that continuously crash can be a problem.
Yes, they're a big problem.
That's fair. What do you think about American teams? We've obviously had Andretti over the last year or so try to come into the sport, got denied. Is that more of a Formula One thing or more of existing teams not wanting to share what's become of the pot?
First of all, I don't think it's against American teams. It's against an 11 team. We have to clarify that one, you know. So
fair enough, yeah.
I think it's a Formula One thing because Formula One brought this sport in a very good place financially. All the teams are now stable. They're not making all profit. Nobody's swimming in gold here, you know, or dollar notes. But it's stable, not like 5-6 years ago when you never knew who is going bankrupt next. So I think Formula One want to safeguard the 10 teams which have invested a lot in Formula One over the last years, some of them billions, to make the sport what it is. So they don't want to weaken them teams by putting an 11 team in, because that
would... But see, I would say that's a team problem then, no?
I mean, obviously the team stand on the side of
Formula They're the One. Ones that are getting the money, right?
Yes, yeah. But in the end.
Oh, you're combining them, but you're basically saying that one is one. That
yeah, exactly.
The teams are Formula One.
Formula One is running the business. If Formula One makes the wrong decisions, a team will have the problem, and then that team will not support Formula One management. It goes all together, you know, because the business is done between the 10 teams and Formula One. The FIA is a regulatory entity, which in the end, they get money again from Formula One to do their job, but they are not bringing anything to the party financially. You know, they're bringing to the party that they regulate the sport. So, but Formula One is on top of the teams, and the teams, they don't have a vote in 11, 12, 13 teams. They do not have a vote.
Yeah.
The vote is with FOM, and FOM decides, we don't want to be in a position like in 2020, well, not long time ago, there were three teams which were on the border to go out of the sport. And can you imagine if you come back in 21 with only seven teams left? What have you got then? You haven't got...
It's confusing enough for some people when teams are changing names all
the
time.
Exactly, right? Then adding people, new people, and they just want to stabilize what it is now.
Yeah, you're like, what's this green car now? Like, it's just, it's different, right?
So,
yeah. But the last thing I want to talk about is really like the business of Formula One. So, I mean, you know this better than anyone, but for people who don't know, most of the time, they're not promoting the races, right? They go somewhere, someone pays them a fee, they bring everything to town, then those people go out, sell tickets. There's sponsorships at the Formula One level, but they do sponsorships too. And it's really like licensing the assets out to the promoter. Las Vegas was a little bit different. They did it themselves. I think they learned a lot. Maybe it was successful in some regards and not successful in other regards. As someone who's seen a lot in Formula One, good and bad, is this something that they can do more of? Or do you think it's like Vegas, maybe one or two others, and keep the model as it is?
I think the biggest part, the model will stay what it is, because it's also ingrained historically. I mean, for F1 to take over races like in Spa and Monza would be very difficult to navigate only the politics, you know, of the country.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to do. So,
like Las Vegas is different because it's brand new.
Exactly,
no one has ever run it before.
It's brand new. They start from new, and they can decide what they do. They invested themselves in real estate there and things like this. So they're doing that. But going into, for example, Monza, to try to navigate that event, to organize that one on your from anybody, not only FOM, it's very difficult because it's an established entity which is, you know, connected politically to the real politics, not sport politics, you know, in with the town, with the province, with the state. You know, it's like, but if you go in there, you will fail, you know. So I think that some will stay like this. I mean, like everything in Formula One, there is no cookie cutter anymore. There is not like it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. Everybody was the same. The same race took place at the same time. The same principle of how you sold the race was applied. No, now Liberty bought it up a little bit, and they continue to do. But I think the historical events will stay being managed and promoted by how it is now by the local promoters.
They just bought MotoGP, which I'm sure you saw.
Yeah.
Do you think they can do a similar thing to what they've done for Formula One?
I think to make it as big as Formula One will be difficult, you know. But I think they learned a lot, Liberty, by buying Formula One.
They're very similar.
Yeah,
in some regard, right?
Yeah, they're like just the smaller.
Just a smaller business.
Exactly.
But
everything
they operate.
Is smaller. The bikes are smaller than the cars. You know?
Yeah, but the business operates similar.
Exactly, and for sure, Liberty will take a lot of lessons they have learned in Formula One and take them to MotoGP without making mistakes, because they learned them, you know, and learning is about making mistakes.
Yep. All right, last question. Best F1 driver of all time?
I don't think
in your mind.
I don't think there is a best, because you have to go through the times, you know.
Really not going to answer?
No, because I don't think you can compare our times with a time Fangio drove, you know, because what the driver...
Do you have a favorite?
I mean, we all have favorites, I mean, but there is not only one. I mean, my favorite is Niki Lauda, because when I was a kid, I grew up, that was my...
Yeah.
I looked up to, and then I worked with him, you know, so obviously...
That's a fair answer.
Exactly. That was my favorite. Unfortunately, it's not around anymore.
I'll take the answer, though. Thank you so much for doing this, Gunther.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.